Welcome, fans of Mystery Detective Stories. This is part one of the first episode of The Golden Slipper and Other Problems for Violet Strange by Anna Catherine Green. She's here. I thought she would be. She's one of the three young ladies you see in the right-hand box near the proscenium. The gentleman thus addressed, a man of middle age and a member of the most exclusive clubs, turned his opera glass toward the spot designated, and in some astonishment retorted,
"She? Why, those are Mrs. Pratt and Miss Violet Strange, none other! And do you mean to say?"
"I do."
"That young, silly girl, whose father I know, whose fortune I know, who is seen everywhere, and who is called one of the season's belles, is an agent of yours?
No names here, please. You want a mystery solved. It is not a matter for the police, that is, as yet. And so you come to me. And when I ask for the facts, I find that women, and only women, are involved. And that these women are not only young, but one and all of the highest society. Is it a man's work to go to the bottom of a combination like this? No! Sex against sex, and if possible, youth against youth. I know of such a person, a girl of gifts and extraordinarily well-placed for the purpose. Why she chooses to use her talents in this direction, why, with means enough to play the part natural to her as a successful debutante, she consents to occupy herself with social and other mysteries, you must ask her, not me. It is enough that I promise you her aid if you want it. That is, if you can interest her, she will not work otherwise."
Mr. Driscoll again raised his opera glass.
"But it's a comedy face," he commented. "It's hard to associate intellectuality with such quaintness of expression. Are you sure of her discretion?"
"Whom is she with?"
"Abner Pratt, his wife and daughters."
"Is he a man to entrust his affairs unadvised?"
"Abner Pratt? Do you mean to say that
she is anything more to him than his daughter's guest?"
"Judge, you see how merry they are. They were in deep trouble yesterday. You are witness to a celebration."
"And she?
Don't you observe how they are loading her with attentions? She's too young to rouse such interest in a family of notably unsympathetic temperament for any other reason than that of gratitude."
"It's hard to believe. But if what you hint is true, secure me an opportunity at once of talking to this youthful marvel. My affair is serious. The dinner I have mentioned comes off in 3 days, and—"
"I know, I recognize your need, but I think you had better enter Mr. Pratt's box without my intervention. Miss Strange's value to us will be impaired the moment her connection with us is discovered."
"Oh, there's Ruthven. He will take me to Mr. Pratt's box,"
remarked Mr. Driscoll as the curtain fell on the second act.
"Any suggestions before I go?"
"Yes, an important one. When you make your bow, touch your left shoulder with your right hand. It is a signal. She may respond to it, but if she does not, do not be discouraged. One of her idiosyncrasies is a theoretical dislike of her work. But once she gets interested, nothing will hold her back. That's all. Except this. In no event, give away her secret. That's part of the agreement. You understand?"
Driscoll nodded and left his seat for Ruthven's box. When the curtain rose for the third time, he could be seen sitting with the Mrs. Pratt and their vivacious young friend. A widower, and still on the right side of 50, his presence there did not pass unnoted, and curiosity was rife among certain outlookers as to which of the twin belles was responsible for this change in his well-known habits. Unfortunately, no opportunity was given him for showing. Other and younger men had followed his lead into the box, and they saw him forced upon the good graces of the fascinating but inconsequent Miss Strange, whose rapid fire of talk he was hardly of a temperament to appreciate. Did he appear dissatisfied? Yes, but only one person in the opera house knew why. Miss Strange had shown no comprehension of or sympathy with his errand. Though she chatted amiably enough between duets and trios, she gave him no opportunity to express his wishes, though she knew them well enough owing to the signal he had given her. This might be in character, but it hardly suited his views, and being a man of resolution, he took advantage of an absorbing minute on the stage to lean forward and whisper into her ear,
"It is my daughter for whom I request your services. As fine a girl as any in this house, give me a hearing. You certainly can manage it."
She was a small, slight woman whose naturally quaint appearance was accentuated by the extreme simplicity of her attire. In the tier upon tier of boxes rising before his eyes, no other personality could vie with hers in strangeness or in the elusive quality of her ever-changing expression. She was vivacity incarnate and, to the ordinary observer, light as thistledown in fiber and in feeling. But not to all. To those who watched her long, there came moments, say when the music rose to heights of greatness, when the mouth, so given over to laughter, took on curves of the rarest sensibility, and a woman's lofty soul shone through her odd, bewildering features. Driscoll had noted this, and consequently awaited her reply in secret hope. It came in the form of a question, and only after an instant's display of displeasure, or possibly of pure nervous irritability.
"What has she done?" "Nothing. But slander is in the air, and any day it may ripen into public accusation."
"Accusation of what?"
Her tone was almost pettish.
Of theft," he murmured.
"On a great scale,"
he emphasized as the music rose to a crash.
"Jewels?"
"Inestimable ones. They are always returned by somebody. People say, by me."
"Ah."
The little lady's hands grew steady. They had been fluttering all over her lap.
"I will see you tomorrow morning. At my father's house,"
she presently observed, and turned her full attention to the stage. Some 3 days after this, Mr. Driscoll opened his house on the Hudson to notable guests. He had not desired the publicity of such an event, nor the opportunity it gave for an increase of scandal secretly in circulation against his daughter. But the ambassador and his wife were foreign, and any evasion of the promised hospitality would be sure to be misunderstood. So the scheme was carried through, though with less success than possibly was expected. Among the lesser guests, who were mostly young and well acquainted with the house and its hospitality, there was one unique figure, that of the lively Miss Strange, who, if personally unknown to Miss Driscoll, was so gifted with the qualities which tell on an occasion of this kind that the stately young hostess hailed her presence with very obvious gratitude. The next episode of The Golden Slipper and Other Problems for Violet Strange will be out next Monday. This production, copyrighted 2010, Stefania Lintonbahn. www.stephsvoice4u.co.uk.